Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
The media today about the outcomes of Lekgotla. Now, at that very point where we faded him out is where he spoke about what's happening in the DRC. I just want to bring in here Professor at the Faculty for Military Science at Stellenbosch University, Professor Thomas Mandrup. Thank you so much for making time for us, Prof. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to the listeners, and thank you for having me.
Prof, I just want to start where we left it off here with the Secretary General of the ANC saying that, you know, he promises us that the President, you know, will sort of at some point say something to the nation. Is it a bit late, you know, that we don't have anything yet from the presidency? 13 people have died, South Africans have died in the DRC, and yet nobody really senior seems to have said anything.
Yeah, that's of course a political statement or situation, of course. But I think it is a bit late. It's quite dramatic what's going on in the DRC at the moment. So one could expect responsibility for what's going on, and also talk to the nation, because it is the sons of the nation that has been killed in this incident, and they are sent there by the politicians to serve for on behalf of South Africa, or South African national interest. That is what we have been told for that. Therefore, of course, one should expect that the politicians take responsibility, including in that respect.
Kenya seems to want to lead some sort of talks with obviously Rwanda and the Congo to try and see if there cannot be some movement to, I don't know, whether we'd be looking at some peace talks. What do you think is possible with the talks that Kenya wants to hold?
And I think it's William Ruto, the president of Kenya, he is the chairman of the East African Community at the moment, and is that capacity that he's invited to the talks. He can restart the talks, and I think that is one of the purposes of what Rwanda has been doing and M23 has been doing, that they want to create a fait accompli that forces the Congo to talk to the M23, which has been the problem for a long time now. They didn't want to talk peace agreements or peace negotiations with the M23 because they said it's a Rwanda proxy. So I think that one could hope that would help, because the situation right now, of course, is that Rwanda and M23 is in control of Goma, basically, and some DRC, the South African and Tanzanian and Malawian forces are stuck in their camps. They can't get out, they can't come in. So they can very much dictate what's going on at the moment, and that puts them in a very different and very strong negotiation position, where for the South African problem, for the South African government at the moment, is that you haven't got much to actually negotiate with. And we have to remember that the mandate of some DRC it was to, with force, to disarm M23. So it's not a peacekeeping mandate. It's a...
Oh, Professor Mandrup? We've just lost you there for a second when you were saying it's not a peacekeeping mission.
Yeah, it's not a peacekeeping mission. It's a peace enforcement mission. The mandate from SADC and through the SAMDRC was to, with force, to disarm and neutralize the threat from M23 in cooperation with the local Congolese forces. And of course, that is the mandate. So it's not like MONUSCO, who was there with the Chapter 7 mandate. But that's very different. That's a peacekeeping mandate. SAMDRC are there to fight a war, to fight to take the fight to M23, and they failed in doing that, and they're in a very precarious situation right now.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, for exactly to your point, for a peace enforcement mission, you know, we know what's been happening in the country. The SANDF has been getting budget cut after budget cut. We have ministers that have not been able to convince Treasury not to cut any further. And yet we were here at a peace enforcement mission, not, as you said, a peacekeeping mission. You know, were we making a mistake?
Yeah, I think again, the hindsight is always easy. But myself and some of my colleagues before the mission was deployed, we raised this. Yeah. It is documented in different policy papers and all that that this was one of the risks going in, because the SANDF was overstretched. You had four at that time when you deployed. You had domestic operations going on. You had border protection. You had forces in MINUSCO already, and you had also forces in Mozambique. So the question was asked: what kind of forces is it that you want to send there? And also, do you have the capabilities needed to actually counter a well-armed and well-disciplined and well-trained opposition that actually knows the terrain and actually knows how you operate? Because they learned that in 2013, the last time we sent South Africa sent forces there. So they were warned, and they knew, and they did it anyway. And that's the sad part. Many sad part about this is when people lose their lives, because they, of course, for the families and the people left behind and all that. But it's also the politicians they knew, and they took the risk. And now, of course, hopefully, I would expect that the politicians will take the responsibility for this and take not take the blame, but they say, okay, we decided to do that because of this, and give us a good explanation why.
13 men down, I don't know, but we haven't heard from the SANDF. We don't know what the strategy is going forward. You know, militarily, are we able to stay there as a peace enforcement mission? Are we able to maintain, I don't even know if we've got momentum, but are we able to keep it going?
No, the thing is, of course, that there was a lot of rumors going on that you were going to reinforce, you know, with a battalion of paratroopers and some infantry and all that. The problem right now is that you can't get into the airport. You haven't got air assets that could actually provide that kind of cover. So now because Goma is gone, you can't get in and out, basically. So the question is, what are you going to do? And that's back to my point before, that Rwanda is in a situation right now where they can actually dictate. M23 and Rwanda can dictate what's going on. And again, M23 announced on Sunday that they expect some DRC, the Burundian forces, the private military companies being stationed there, that they disarm and leave Congo. So that's where we are. And again, I can't really see what kind of options that Ramaphosa is going to have in relation to that, because right now he cannot sustain and he cannot logistically sustain what's going on, the camps up there. So they're a very precarious situation. One could hope, and then again, there's a UN Security Council emergency meeting later today, that of course that sanctions and other things are targeted against Rwanda, which maybe can put some international pressure on.
Oh, Prof, I think that line is failing us every now and then. I don't know, we keep losing you. I don't know if you're able to hear me, Prof.
I am, yes. Sorry.
All right. So what options then does, right now as we speak, does the DRC have? You know, what can they do? We know what they couldn't do, but what's possible for the military now?
I think right now, if anyone who's been in Goma, you know, it's the city is on one side you've got the lake, and the other side you've got the Rwandan border, and then on north you've got the big volcano. The infrastructure around the city is quite difficult, and terrain is quite difficult. So it's going to be very, very difficult when you haven't got access to the airport to actually to reinforce your put in forces there and resupply and all that. They can of course go from South Kivu and other places and try to drive in, but it's logistically quite a difficult terrain to operate in. So right now, the best, and Thabo Mbeki said it quite well yesterday, that there's no military solution to this conflict. There's a political solution, and it requires that everyone is invited to the table. It requires that minority rights for the Kinyarwanda speaking, the Tutsi minorities and all that are secured, which was part of the 2009 peace agreement. It requires that the remnants of the Rwanda genocide, the FDLR, are disarmed, and requires that Rwanda stops meddling into what's going on inside the DRC, including control of mineral resources and all that. So these kind of talks need to be taken on the way, and that requires international involvement and a lot of international pressure on the parties to do that. Before the people of the parties are willing to do that, it's going to be difficult. But again, with this situation, what has happened now, Congo is under pressure, and maybe this could be a way that for Tshisekedi and others to accept that they have to talk to M23 to try to find a lasting solution.
I was going to say, you know, in as much as all the parties that you've just spoken about are necessary, to your point earlier, that you will also need international pressure. So I suspect Rwanda will be listening mainly to its bigger donors, you know, its bigger brothers, so to speak, not necessarily just the ones that are going to be coming to the table in Kenya.
Yeah. No, exactly. And that's the thing, that they were previously, you know, the Western powers, the US, the UK and others, they were quite adamant back in 2013 with the sanctions and stopping in development aid and all that. The problem right now is that we have the geopolitical.
Professor Mandrup? All right, I don't know if you can hear us, Professor.
I can hear you.
Okay, we just keep losing you every now and then. And you were just making the point before I lost you that, you know, right now things have changed somewhat since 2013. And I get it. I mean, there are some really sweet deals that Rwanda has, for instance, with the EU. Rwanda has some sweet deals with the UK, for instance. And it may not be as simple as what we saw in 2013.
No, and I also, again, the thing is also that we suddenly see, you know, a reality where Russia is attacking Ukraine circumventing this sovereignty rights. We have the Trump of the U.S. presidency threatening my own country, Denmark, on Greenland and you know, on the Panama Canal and all these kind of things. So suddenly we see the rules of the game of international order is changing. And again, are the U.S. going to be willing to... clamp down on Rwanda, who's at the same time a donor darling with 8% growth rate for the last 20 years and all these kind of things. So this is going to be, and I think that is one of the calculations done by Rwanda in this case, that they know that the international community has changed and their reality has changed. And that makes it, of course, them in a better position. But let's see what happens in the Security Council, because the critique has been quite adamant. But whether we see reaction, that's a different case.
You know, will there be, I mean, I know what we're hoping to happen at the Security Council, but quite seriously, who is likely to lead internationally these talks?
Yeah, previously U.S. has played a quite dominant role in this. France has also been a quite important player in this. So one could hope some of these actors actually play a key role here in trying to put pressure on that. Russia, of course, you can't really count on them at the moment. China is always playing and have economic interest in the DRC, like everyone else, but especially them. And there's a lot of a strategic competition going on at the moment between the U.S. and China, especially in this area as well, on precious metals and all that. So it's going to be difficult, but one could hope that especially France and the U.S. can take the lead on this. But maybe also some of the P10, which meaning the elected members of the U.N. Security Council, they can play a role here. They can try to because they're not, you know, as heavily invested, they're not veto countries and permanent members and all that. They could maybe go in and play a constructive role here. The African Union should go in, and they're already there, but they should go in and play a decisive role as well. The question is whether SADC... is going to accept that, because this has been a static interest and a static, and that's the thing about, you know, some DRC, that this mission was deployed as it was supposed to maybe replace the UN force there and all that, and now it seemingly is failing, and that's quite an embarrassment. And where does that leave SADC in this? So this is a very tricky situation at the moment.
Sure, it is. Do you anticipate it to drag on?
Hopefully not. It depends very much what's going to happen the next couple of days. We know there's still pockets of fighting in Goma, which means that there's some militias and then some FRTC, Congolese government forces, that are pockets of them still resisting in the city itself. It also depends on when we talk about control, how much control does the M23 have on the situation on the ground. And is that going to change? Again, if the South, let's say the Sun DRC and including the South African forces, if they are stuck in their camps and we can't get resupplies and foodstuff and all that logistically, or take them and support them, get our wounded out and all that, then it's going to be quite difficult to you cannot live with that, of course. And then you will need to find some kind of solution to change that fact. And therefore, you will be forced to find a negotiated solution, maybe to leave Congo. That could very well be the solution. Quite interestingly, the M23 in their statement on Sunday didn't mention the UN force. Mm. So the UN force they were criticized by the M23 today because of their participation in the fighting on the side of the Congolese government. But they still consider to be a neutral force more than, for instance, Sam DRC, which is, of course, part of the fight against M23.
I really appreciate you giving us your take there, Professor, at the Faculty for Military Science at Stellenbosch University, Professor Thomas Mandrup. Obviously, this is a moving target and we'll keep our eyes on the prize. Hopefully, very soon, we'll hear something from our president, Phelan Balula earlier on said that he will say something soon. So we're all waiting to hear either from himself or at least the Minister of Defence, Njimo Tega, who at the moment I don't think we've heard her say much. We've seen statements coming from them, we've heard spokespeople, but I would like the Minister to speak. I would also like the President to say something. 13 men down, I think we need to hear from really senior people at the moment.
Point on. Discussing the world around you. If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.